We left this at last, oh, council improvement, yeah, Queens Historical Society. So we left this at last meeting, we had received a request from the Historical Society wanting to know if we were interested in being part of refurbishing the murals. Correct?
Yes.
So I did contact, I would wait until Councilor Carroll has returned. We'll take a break. Take a 5-minute break. All right. I just, I don't know where to put my agenda, but we're on, here we are. We're on 7.2, Queens County Historical Society. So we were asked by the Historical Society if we had any interest in helping to rejuvenate the sides of the buildings. And I was asked to contact the building owners, which I did, respecting their future plans for the sides of the building. So the owner, Ken Anthony, he has no plans, and he actually asked if he was allowed to paint it over because he thought maybe he wasn't allowed. So I said, yes, by all means, it's your building. You may do with it what you like. Anyways, presently his building. It may not be his building soon, but it's still in his building hands. As for Mike Wilson, Mr. Wilson said the outside of his building was not a priority for him at this point in time. So basically, that's where he left that. And what else? So I also spent some time and I found out some. Councilor Gidney, did you find out any background on the murals?
Yes, I contacted the chair at Social Work Queens Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
And he checked in and he said they don't have any money. And he believes it was given back, but the project did not take off.
Pardon?
So there is no money.
Right. And I did also find out how the murals got to be there, which was rather interesting. So I read some town minutes. In 1994, the bid committee was a committee, every business committee paid 22 cents per hundred or something and into this pot of money. So the bid committee were approached by the South Queens Chamber of Commerce, and the South Queens Chamber of Commerce wanted a $2,000 loan and a $2,000 grant and a $2,500 loan to pay the painter Matt to paint the side of the Metropolitan Building as it was owned at that point in time. The owner of Home Hardware paid to have their mural painted. So from there, I found out that it was Alan Founds and Sylvia Collins that approached the bid committee. So I contacted Alan, who subsequently told me to contact David Knoll, who was also on the South Queens Chamber of Commerce at the time, because that's where the request came from. So I spoke to Alan. He was the president of the South Queens Chamber of Commerce at the time. He and his wife had come back from BC, where in Chaminas, there is a town painted of nothing but murals. The whole town is murals. All the buildings are painted with murals. So he came back from Chaminas and convinced the South Queens Chamber of Commerce to have a mural committee made up of himself, Sylvia Collins, and David Knoll. So they went, and their plan was they would paint these big cement buildings with murals, and then all the other buildings in town would follow suit, and Liverpool could become a town known as murals like the town in BC was. So they did, they got their money, they painted the signs. So $5,000 is what it cost back then to paint the Metropolitan. And I asked them both their opinions about RQM being involved in any restoration project. And they both said the same thing, and David Knowles gave me permission to air his opinion, which was, the murals never achieved the objective for which they were created. They have outlived their usefulness, and there are more important things to spend taxpayer money on. And Alan Founds echoed David Knowles' comments. So that's the history of the murals, and whether or not council wishes to become involved and have them repaint it, having heard the history and the opinion of two people that were on the committee that created them, and knowing that the money came from the South Queens Chamber of Commerce, and it was a South Queens Chamber of Commerce project. And it's certainly going to cost a lot more than $5,000 to paint, to repaint those murals at today's safety standards. So do you wish any further work, or do you just wish to let the Historical Society know that we are not interested in being part of a mural restoration project? Councilor Brown.
I think that what we've heard here today is that we're low on staff, and there's other projects that would benefit the community a lot more with the money and staff time and council time. And since it's not our project, not our buildings, I'd like to move that we drop this from the agenda at a future point.
So should we just, what should we do? Notify them, Councilor Gidney?
Comment. With the building owners, if they, under said facade program, would they be able to apply for up to $5,000? Would that be correct? So we went back to the other committee and said, look, we're not interested, or we don't have the manpower, or we don't have the money. However, if they could approach the owners, they could work things out in that respect, that may be an option for them. Is that correct?
That's right.
That would give
Mr.
them
Anthony,
$10,000.
Yeah, Mr. Anthony already asked me that, and I told him that the facade program has just been relisted, it's $5,000, and he'll probably use it to buy paint.
Okay, thank you.
But we can do that. We can, he knows and he is aware of the facade program, as Mr. Wilson would be aware of the facade program. But the question is, should we just let the Historical Society know that we are not interested in being part of a mural restoration project?
Yes.
Because that was the question.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sadly, yes.
Yes. Okay. Sadly, yes. And I'll just let them know that there is monies available should the business owners wish to take.
Yes,
and also South Queens Chamber of Commerce, you know, if anyone likes to write grants, the province announced that big old grant program out there to beautify Main Streets and everything else. So maybe they could apply for $100,000 and repaint those murals.
They probably also have the option under the arts and culture funding to hire art students from community college, you know, or the College of Art and Design as a summer program to do something, to touch up some of it.
Sadly, the day of someone going up a ladder.
Yeah.
On those crooked streets without safety harnessing and everything else, those days are gone. So, all right, so that's that. So we'll write, I'll just reply to them. Council implementation report. Anything outstanding there that anyone has any questions of?
That I've
so just remember, there was the note that when we send out our tax bills, that will show the area rate listed, because that was a recommendation that the council had wished, that for the Brooklyn area,
they're always shown.
Are they always shown the extra area rate?
Yeah. The request was that we
show that they pay electronically, I think by credit card, it takes a few days.
Rates will be shown on future bills. I don't know why that was added in there then. Okay, so the revised municipal plan strategy and land use bylaw. Ian and Mr. McLeod. You may begin.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Just a brief background, as you're all aware. Current planning documents were adopted by council back in 2009. And as per provincial legislation and the policy and the municipal planning strategy, we're required to do periodic reviews of those documents as to reflect the current time. So over the past 3 years, the municipality, through its planning advisory committee, staff, and council, has been working with land planning and design for the preparation of the revised municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw. That term, COVID, certainly has impacted the timeline. However, we finally got to the stage of being able to bring documents forward to council for first reading in February 22nd of this year. The Municipal Government Act sets out, I guess, the process for adopting planning documents, part of which includes holding a public hearing to get comments from the public on the proposed documents. So meetings, an in-person meeting was carried out on March the 22nd, and a virtual meeting carried out on March 23rd. As well, council was forwarded copies of written submissions that were received prior to the public hearing. The staff report includes a summary of the comments that were received at both public hearings as well as the written submissions. So they were provided to you prior to this meeting. So with the comments that were received, there were a number of issues. I guess it was a couple of themes, as Leon pointed out earlier. Certainly livestock was a major point of discussion, as well as RVs during those hearings and written submissions. So I guess what we're looking for today, there's a number of items that we felt requires some direction of council as to move forward with the adoption of the new planning documents. So in the discussion paper, they are bolded at the, I guess, the last two pages, following the third and last page of items that that we're looking for is from some direction of council. The first one of those being the restriction on the use of RV parking sites based on seasonal occupancy. This was presented in a written submission as well as verbal comments at the public hearing. Essentially, some residents are looking to limit the time that a person is allowed to occupy a RV which is parked on property, essentially cohabitating the RV. So they cite safety concerns, as most RVs aren't designed for full time. So I guess what
So what's your feedback? Councillor Charlton provided us with a chart from what I assume the Planning Advisory Committee would have received. Is that where this came from? From the Planning Advisory Committee?
This is from the
what we heard documents on cleansplan.com, put RVs back in.
Yeah, so this would have been when you were doing the first draft?
Yeah, this would have been after the draft round of meetings.
Right, so this is what, planning advisory would have been made aware of this?
Yeah.
And they use this to base their decision upon. So this was the background information for your information that the members of the planning advisory committee received and reviewed, and then, made their decision. So I guess the first question is, do we wanna tell people they can't live year round in their RVs? Anyone here wanna do that? Deputy Mayor Muse?
I have a few in my district, and they can't afford to build a house.
Exactly.
That's what they live in. So I have a hard job to tell them.
Anyone here who feels that we should restrict RVs and say that you cannot live in them year round? Councilor Fancy?
I think that should be, that has to be looked at as a whole. You know, since 2019, things have drastically changed. We know people are living in areas that they shouldn't be living in. The housing situation to bring forward this at this particular time, like I said, when we first started this, it was totally different than it is today. So I think what's an acceptable housing regulation needs to be, I don't know what we need to do, but we need to, we just can't go be, some people have no other place to go. So I think that's really gonna have to be looked at as a whole.
So you don't think you don't want us to say you cannot live in the market?
Yeah, well, yeah, we just talked about RVs. I'm just saying as a whole, not just the RVs.
No, but what's the first point? We're talking about RVs right now.
Yeah, but I'm just saying as a whole, we need to, not just identifying RVs. We're gonna have to be careful what we're saying is acceptable living as a whole, in a whole.
So that's next. So,
anyone's gonna stand up?
No habitation of RVs.
I'm concerned that we would tell people that they can live in them year-round, because there's a lot of issues with safety in mobile, in travel trailers. They're not designed for year-round use. I know there's people out in my area that live in them year-round, and some of the stuff that they've run into would be considered unsafe in most areas, with mold building up. Living in them in the cold winter months, they get a lot of sweating, and they're built with chipboard. People have had them fall apart in 2 years. So we're putting people in a position that we have to pass legislation to provide the safety for our residents. I'm not comfortable telling them they can't live there. I'm really not comfortable with us telling them that they can live there year round in something that can't be inspected.
So we just leave it mute?
Yes.
We don't say they can't, we don't say they can't.
That's right.
We just mute,
that's
we just
right.
mute on the subject as the current documents are.
Yeah. I
the
just
current
would have
documents are mute on that subject. Anyone disagree with that? And the other one is the timeline of which
can we just skip one? Draft one over?
Oh, so that's it. So we'll be the restrict use of parking. All right, so that was that whole one. Okay. That one's gone. And then number two, remove permitted uses, home-based businesses, small option homes, community centers, recreational uses in the Lakeshore Limited Development SL zone.
So, yeah, I guess the context on that one, of course, is we originally had one Lakeshore zone for the entire lake areas. In response to comments from road owners associations looking to, you know, have a zone that met a tighter list of uses, more similar to what the current zoning in the 2009 document has, we created the Lakeshore Limited Development Zone. That zone is not exactly identical to the current R7 zone, which applies to these areas. There's a couple reasons for that. You know, some things were uses that weren't explicit in the 2009 document, things like parks and recreation. We've added that as a use in everywhere. And a couple of things were ones that we looked at, you know, as a broad policy. So things like the small options home. In the new draft municipal planning strategy, there is a policy to the idea of enhanced housing options. There's a policy that says So, similarly with home-based businesses, looking at, you know, as an economic development opportunity, allowing home-based businesses everywhere where dwellings are permitted. So this Lakeshore Limited Development Zone is a little broader than the old R7. Recreational uses, that's another one where we're being explicit. Things like having to be able to have a tennis court or that kind of thing falls under that definition. So the range is a bit wider than what the community was asking for, but certainly open to hearing discussion on that, I think.
And I guess I just noticed one other, because this was comments that came through the Forest Point Lawn Owners Association. One other thing that I didn't include is, it was obviously part of their discussion, was the use of RV parking spaces. They do not want to see RV parking spaces within that SL zone as well.
So how do we do that? Because that SL zone takes up a lot of land. Councilor Brown.
With this SL zone, it's mostly areas that are covered by existing lot owners association, which have their own restrictive covenants. And I've talked to a couple of the different groups who are not against the proposals as they are now. There's one group who is, and they have the power within their restrictive covenants to enforce their own rules on their own property. Our land use bylaws allowing these does not supersede their ability to limit them in their lot owners association. So I think if this one particular group wants it limited, they have that ability within their own restrictive covenants not to change it for everybody in the county.
Yeah, that's from the counselor who represents this area. So our counselor in agreement with that if the groups do have existing covenants and they can enforce their covenants. Are we fine with that?
I'm the one that's going to get called, so.
I just think it would be unfair to limit such things like that in those zones.
In that great
and half, or not half of them, I guess 90% of them are okay with it.
Yeah. And the reason we put some of these things in our discussions was that these are communities where a lot of people retire, and we want to be able to have small home-based businesses that are not going to increase the traffic flow significantly, but allow people to stay in their homes and not have to travel 40 minutes to get basic services that they could get there, like a hairdresser or
exactly
or something like that.
That's what I thought too, because as it stands, I'm not looking to move out there, just to clarify,
yeah.
But for something that, like, I own a home-based business and have a salon in the back of my home, which is not a big or deal, there's not a ton of traffic that comes in and out. It's pretty small scale, so be able to not even do that in a place like that where people want to stay.
So the recommendation is we're going to leave it as is, and if there is a particular lot owners association, they do have their own covenants that say you can't have that, so they simply need to enforce their own covenants on the people who have purchased within their area. Okay, so that is too easy so far. All right. RVs parked on a property and not located on an RV parking site for a maximum 14 days in a calendar year is too restrictive.
So again, the context on that one is we have the RV parking site as a way to, you know, control the density of RVs in these areas, recognizing that, you know, people want to come to visit or, you know, have a little family get together or whatever for the weekend. Don't want to get into the bureaucracy of a development permit for that kind of thing. So there is a kind of blanket 14 days within the draft bylaw that it's just permitted. You don't need to permit anything like that to enable that type of kind of casual RV use. 14 days is a number. It's, you know, it's really a tool for Mike's staff benchmark, you know, if there's a complaint or something like that, to have a threshold that's the ability to enforce. No specific significance, I don't think, to that number, other than it's long enough to allow people to do that kind of activity, and short enough that, you know, it's not a wild amount of, so it's still be a lot of work to enforce that, but not to prove that 14 days, I think, is, you know, within the realm of possibility.
So the council feel 14 days is too restrictive? You think there should be, Carl?
I think there's a lot of people that have moved here from other parts of Maine and the world, and that sometimes they have people come in and they want to stay a longer period of time, so I'd say 30 days would be my thought on that.
Councilor Gidney?
My thought exactly, and that's what I was going to mention, is if people come here from away, and sometimes you're with an RV, then yeah, they're going to stay for a while, and I think 30 days would be a reasonable amount of time under those circumstances, and well, under any circumstances, I think 30 days would be more appropriate.
So I just want to clarify, just make sure everyone is on the same page. So these are not RV parking sites. These are if a cousin from wherever wants to come park an RV on my property. And so when we're saying 14 days in the calendar year, or whether it's 30 or whatever the days are, that's per property. That doesn't mean that my sister can come 2 weeks later and stay for 2 weeks. Doesn't max out at the 30?
Right.
Because that needs to be clarified.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be per property. I mean, the reality of enforcing.
Well, I absolutely understand that, but I'm just thinking of the people that are dead set against RVs.
Yeah.
Will absolutely be wanting this enforced.
Yeah.
So that's my concern.
Yeah, that would be per property.
Yeah. And this is the tool, I guess, as staff, we don't have the resources to actively be going out and calculating that, okay, this RV has been on the property. I guess it's more of a point driven. We can start to walk, we can do an investigation and start to walk, and that's when your time frame starts. It gives us that ability, so in a problematic situation. But I guess it goes per property, and it's not necessarily 14 days now, 7 days now, 7 days. It's a total of that within a calendar year, so it's not necessarily staying for the 30-day period sector. It's just trying to limit what is typically a low-density residential property occupied by a number of RVs, and increasing the density of that property. RVs and people on that property, and how that affects the property. So,
right.
The 14 days is enough.
Yeah, I definitely feel like 14 days is restrictive, and I just heard some different comments from folks about how affordable it is if you have, you know, an RV to go to the valley for a week or two if you know someone and stay there, as opposed to, you know, Airbnbs and all these different things. And a lot more people are trying to travel within our own province, especially in this COVID world, I guess. So I do feel like the 14 days is too restrictive now. And I'm just, in comparison to these documents I pointed out, it seems to be, I know some of them are, well, it seems like quite a few of them are silent on temporary accommodations. The habitation of RVs was a separate category. And then really it seems to kind of fall anywhere from 30 to 90. And so I'm just thinking, even if you thought of it from the 30 days, there goes June. So what about July and August? We're trying to promote tourism and people to our area, so I guess that's just maybe something we should consider, and a lot has changed in the last 2 years, so that's just my thought.
Councilor Brown?
I've got I mean, I've heard some concerns about people complaining who don't want trailers there, but I've also got some concerns about people abusing the system, because I've seen a number of properties in my area, because I'm in a predominantly seasonal area, where people have a cabin, they put a trailer on a pad, and then every single weekend all summer their friends come in with three or four trailers, so you have five or six trailers on a lot all summer long every weekend, which is kind of abusing that system, which leads to people complaining about it. So I'm not sure how we deal with that potential abuse of it.
Wouldn't that fall under a campground zoning at some point after?
But they're temporary.
Three, or?
Yeah, but if they, you know, if they're coming Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's three days. If we give them 30 days, that's 10 weekends. They can do that 10 weekends, and they're temporary.
Right, but is there not provision in here that it's an RV and a dwelling, or two RVs if there's no dwelling?
But that's permanent on a pad. This is completely separate. It's not addressed in there that people can put a third one on their lot if somebody comes to visit. It's my understanding.
We need to clarify that, I think.
Could you clarify that? So you can have a dwelling and a pad, and then you restrict it to presently proposed to 14 days.
So you can have two dwellings,
right,
or one dwelling, one pad, or two pads as
right.
a actual land use.
Right.
You can have the temporary up to 14 days.
Right. Which will give you your third.
Mike and I are just discussing here whether multiple RVs would fall into that definition of campground, whether they were temporary or not. But that would be enforceable.
Sorry, Mike.
What's
that? Yeah, and the one I'm talking about is not the one that they've had problems with. This is a whole other place, and the guys come in, they bring motorhomes and ATVs. Nope, they're. I got no problem with it. It's a whole different place.
You picked up, guys. Best of you, Dave.
No, I'm just waiting for them to look up this. Before we put another one in the mix, I want them to clarify that.
So I guess the section that's currently in the RV parking site section of the bylaw, it doesn't, in the ones that are parked for the 14 days or the temporary ones, there's no indication of a that could be parked on the site at any one time. I think under the definition of campground, if they want, it's two or more
RV parking sites.
Then you get into a campground, or meeting the definition of campground. So,
so as written, the temporary ones would not have a cap on it.
They would not have a cap. So I guess that leads to another question. As far as multiple RVs converging on a particular property.
Yeah, that's...
Should we look at a cap?
It's a big glaring loophole. Yeah, that I hadn't seen before, until now.
I just foresee that being an issue, so...
Councillor Fancy, were you commenting in on this comment, on this topic?
Yes.
Okay.
I noticed when we say RV use for 14 days. Does that mean that a building could sit there with nobody in it? It's not RV use, because it doesn't mean that it's being occupied. The whole idea is that people who want to abuse it, they come every weekend, and how are you going to tell that they've been there, just how many days they've been, if it's 14 days, if it's 30 days. No matter how many days we put on this here, it's the people who are bringing the RVs in and out. I don't know how you're going to change anything with that. 30 days.
Second name use?
It doesn't say use. It says RV parked on property and not located on an RV parking site.
Okay, I'm just looking at this here where it says RV used for 14 days in a calendar year.
But unless, like, if it's being used, whether it's full-time use of that RV on a daily basis of that 14 days, I guess if you're parking it on to store it for the winter, which a lot of we're not going to classify that as requiring RV parking. So,
if it's set up for the purpose of providing accommodations, whether or not there's someone in there or not, you know, it's for the purpose rather than in your garage or.
So Ian, just to clarify, because that was a concern that I heard. Someone said, okay, I own a home, I have an RV. It'll be parked, you know, periodically through the summer. Sometimes we travel, sometimes we don't. But if we have friends who want to come down with their RV, the way these documents read, they think that they cannot have that RV on their property because they already have one. However, their RV is not in use. It is for storage. So I'm just wondering if that could be clarified in these documents as, like, easy reading. Because people are just automatically assuming the way it reads that they can't do that. If there's one sitting there, whether it's in use or not, they cannot have the other.
Yeah, I think that situation would be fine. So it's how do we clarify that in the language? It's more than two.
Yeah, more than two, so under the definition of campground, it's more than two. So as far as clarification, I guess conformity with the definition of a campground, give you a limit, a maximum for RVs. Or I guess is that the, like, that's kind of the direction of council. Is should we be identifying the maximum number of RVs that can be parked on one site? Current regulations don't address.
Based on that, if we restricted it, would be restricted to. But if it's more than that, would be classified as a campground. Is that correct?
And I guess you have to look at it from, I guess, the other perspective of allowing people to have friends come down and stay on the property in their RVs. But you need to also look at the impact that increased density in that property is having on the surrounding residential and property owners, the increased noise, traffic, whatever. That there's also that impact. So I guess as far as numbers. You have to deal with the fact that why you join the residents around those properties as well. So that's
certainly one option. Complicate everything is certainly to just cap the number of RVs parked on this property. You can have two or three or whatever the number is. No time limit. This is what it is, and that's very easy to enforce. You should staff can show up and say, yeah, three of them on there, that's a campground, sorry. You do lose that nuance a little bit of making space for visit. There's the two or there's the not. Whether they're visitors or they're permanent. But it certainly takes out all the time limit.
Deputy Mayor Hughes?
So, reading this, like, it says RVs parked on the property. So I look at it like, in my district, I have a lot of people that have land cleared, have septic systems and wells, and they bring their RV there and set it. But the way this says, they're not allowed to do it over 14 days now.
Unless they're parked on an RV parking site. So they come in for a permit and park on an RV parking site, which I guess the thought with that is, if you're going to have an RV parked on a property for essentially a...
the summer. Like, these people come down and live in it for
exactly.
The summer.
They should be subject to the same, like, setback requirements from your water courses, your lot lines, similar to what a dwelling would be. So that's what the RV parking site, they would apply to that, and to, they would have to include how far that parking site is from the property lines, and that sort of thing. So it's being treated essentially as a cabin or a cottage. And allowed to stay, however.
And allowed to get accessory buildings, decks and stuff like that.
And just to clarify to that point, that doesn't mean that they need a septic system. Needs to be, under that provision, it says a vote approved from the Department of Environment, however it reads. So that could look like a outhouse or one of those camping toilets. That's not someone having to spend a bunch of money on a septic system or anything like that. Correct?
The onsite sewage disposal regulations, which does allow pit privies, but mostly there's a distance. The main thing there is there's a distance between water courses and the pit privies.
Right, I just heard that concern too from some residents, just the way that it read, they thought it was more of an expensive avenue, potentially what they had, and I mentioned it to Mike, but just that they thought, you know, that one of those portable toilets that you couldn't do this wasn't sufficient or wasn't allowed.
The current draft doesn't include regulations around that.
And I know those regulations are made to prevent the horrible people that put a hole in the ground and put the sewage down a tank. I like to think there's not many of those people. But what about the people that they just drive their RV over to the sewer dump station and dump it when it's full? Why do they need to have a pit privy on their site? Like, I'm sure there's more honest than dishonest. And wouldn't the honest people that have developed a nice summer spot with their RV, they're all beautifully contained. They're just like a $200,000 home on wheels. You know, they drive and dump at a proper disposal system. But according to this, they'd have to build a pit privy just to say they have it, even though they never use it, and then still, you know, drive and dump.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I know we try to catch all those illegal people, but I like to think that people are legal. So how can there any way to make an allowance so that the legal people that do what they're supposed to and drive and dump?
I guess that's the reason you have any regulations, though, isn't it? That you're regulating for those, I guess, potential issues, and somebody still wants to take it off site to dump it, but if you're parking your RV on a property on a seasonal basis, they're likely gonna more utilize some sort of on-site system.
But you put your gray water, like, and those things that have tanks for, so you flush all your gray water in a chemical toilet, you flush all your gray water in a pit privy, you still have to dump your gray water at a station. We're not demanding on-site septic systems.
Could I just ask a question to clarify her point? So for that, if she had the RV and then she wanted to park somewhere seasonally and apply for the permit, it doesn't mean that she has to go do all these things like I had just said earlier. That could be her, like she could have a portable toilet. Like as long as she can show something that meets that standard, it doesn't matter if she wants to pull that out and go empty it, does it not?
No, yeah, so, yeah, the main thing is it's got to be a distance from the lake for those pit privies. I think the philosophy behind it was, you know, we're looking at these as, if you're going to use your RV as kind of a de facto cottage, when you're going to have structures, we're going to treat you similarly to a cottage in terms of the density that's allowed and the expectations in terms of risks to the lake. It is an extra requirement there. It's a fairly minor one, I think, in terms of if you have to build if you have a little compost toilet or have to build a little pit privy for your RV, it's an extra step for sure. But
very dear to me, is that I'm building a house this year. And what if I wanted to buy a trailer and put it up on my property and sell my house? Would I be able to set it there? Because I won't have sewer or anything. I would have to bring in an outdoor toilet or something like that while the house is being built. But then I don't fall under regulations because it isn't a proper setup or things like that. But then I'd be told, no, I can't do that.
You could certainly apply for your RV parking site, a development permit. Park that on there if it's going to be on there for a considerable length of time.
So, 14 days. This is where the question started. So, and it went from 14 days to we need a cap on how many RVs can be parked on one site. So, for example, if we go to 30, can you then have maybe 10 people for 3 days? Or are we going to put a cap on the number of RVs on a site?
I feel like it makes more sense to put a cap on the numbers per site than to try to coordinate these days.
And wouldn't it be much easier for the bylaw officer as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
So you want the cap, Deputy Mayor Hughes?
I do, but I know people have a wedding.
Right.
And they're going to have 5 RVs in there. But that's only one weekend. By the time we get the bylaw officer, they're going to be gone anyway. But you're going to have some of that.
This is erected for like a special occasion. Provision if somebody was having a wedding, there is a general provision where there's something erected or a use put in place that does not need 14 days.
They could just ask for special permission.
But it would have to be a special event type of. It's more intended for like a festival or something like that.
So couldn't we put something in there, Mike, that something like that, like under that 14 days or something like you said, by. Like approval. I don't know how that makes sense. I'm not even sure how to word it.
It's just the enforcement capabilities of if somebody's having an event on a weekend. 5 RVs. It's going to be gone by the time you receive the complaint and get in to investigate and request people removed. So, say we're not actively driving around looking for this stuff. It's a lot of what we derive from complaints we receive. So,
when you have a special event paper or made up for something that I want to have a wedding this weekend, and you put it into the region, they approve it.
That could be a big burden on the staff, though.
Yeah. Then you know you'd be doing it legally.
And that. Follow up to Councillor Fancy, I was contacted by someone and they won't break the rule.
That's right.
If we have a rule that says you can only have 3 and this person has a large land and is a justice of the peace and sometimes conducts weddings for family and friends, there's never been a complaint, and often there's 10 trailers parked there for a weekend because that's what they do. So should that person have a campground permit? But that person said, I won't do it if I'm breaking the rule, the law. But then they suggested, is it possible that we waive a special occasion? And I don't know how we even get into that.
We do something like that contingent on lot size, like if you had 20 acres, it's not a risk to the neighboring.
If you're getting into special permit on special occasion.
This.
The scope of the land use bylaw is kind of a standalone, you know, like a vending or something like that.
Okay.
Issuing license.
Would that be more so like how we issue approval for certain organizations to have alcohol, like the farmer's market on our land, like things like that, is that what you mean?
That wouldn't be a development. Special event permit or whatever.
Okay, so we're back.
I feel like we probably don't need to worry about this one.
No.
Yeah,
so let's.
I think it may be overly complicated.
Yeah, so is 14 days, do we feel it's too rigid, do you wanna increase it? Yes, so she nods. Okay, 30?
I like what Ian said about taking the days off.
Yes.
And limiting it to a number.
Then we're back to that situation where this whole thing started.
But if you're limiting, so you're limiting, so the number maximum two.
If you limit. In addition to the. In addition to the RV camping spot?
In lieu of, just scrap it all.
And just say you can only have two RVs on your property.
Two RVs per lot, more than that, you're a campground.
Two RVs per property.
And that means if you have a host or cottage on that property, you have one RV?
One, right.
Go with two.
Two.
If you're gonna have just a blanket statement.
You're just gonna say two RVs, so you can have a cottage or a home and have two RVs. Or you can have no cottage or home on the property but have two RVs, got it. Makes sense.
How's that one fit?
Seems like the best fit for the size of the hole we have to fill.
And otherwise, if people, they can apply for campground permit or, then they have to have a certain amount of land.
Yeah, I feel like it's a balanced, fair approach without potentially having your neighbor have 25 trailers next to you all summer without being a proper campground, I mean, other setbacks and things.
Two RVs?
So is it two
And you
RVs?
Know very well, these will not be, unless there's a major problem in a bylaw, or it's called.
Yeah.
Which would be if there were continuous and six and eight or, but is two current? Councilor Hawks, you have plenty of rural in your area.
Well, I'm just wondering about the Queens County Fair, are they a campground or?
They get a campground permit.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, these don't apply to them.
Yeah, I can see somebody having their RV stored there and somebody coming in and have the second one there. I don't think there's anyone needs for any more than two.
Two?
Just to clarify, are these allowed in all zones?
I don't think it's all zones.
Well, the RV parking sites aren't permitted in all zones, but
no.
I guess I'll leave it to you as a council, you know, if you want to go this route. It's just blank.
So, sorry, for the temporary accommodations, I mean.
Temporary accommodations, yeah, it would, that would be currently in all zones, I guess, at 14 days. Because we're not regulating basically below 14 days in the current draft.
Taken out the.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, I guess that's the question. Is if you're going to remove that, all of this, and just say two per lot or whatever, is it a, I guess it is a blanket.
Yeah, and that's a challenge you can
And that's straight across.
So with your, I guess your urban core areas, currently wouldn't permit RV parking sites, they would basically be everywhere.
You'd have to meet setbacks. Still have to meet all the setback requirements.
So yeah, I guess if you remove that section, just say a maximum of two RVs site or per property, you're.
Well, just put the setback requirements with it. So that way, if you're in an urban area, if you can't meet the setbacks, then you can't have two. And you want to keep them away from water courses. So if you just blanket state two RVs meeting the setbacks.
But if you're not.
If you're not requiring a permit.
If you're not, yeah. If you're taking away that requirement for an RV, because we
as a B, we don't have the ability to, it's not really a land use, I guess the RV parking sites is the land use, which you can attribute setbacks and require permits for.
Oh, that's a problem then.
Yes.
So, under the District of Chester, in the sheet I handed out, it says they're permitted without a development permit unless requirement for development permit specifically listed in zone standards. Two zones require a permit for stays greater than 14 days. In these zones, limit is one RV per lot, meeting setback requirements, not connected to wastewater, and not exceeding a stay of 60 days or 180 days, different between the two zones in a year. So couldn't we work around that with something similar? For those higher density, like urban areas, is that, that's what I feel like is a concern, right?
Right.
I'm not against the RVs, but I understand the concerns about like urban high density areas, if someone can just throw two RVs on the lot and not have to meet any setbacks. They're essentially on top of their neighbors, I could see that being an issue, so I guess I'm just trying to ask what's the best approach.
Yeah, I think if we're gonna have setbacks anywhere, we should have them everywhere.
Right.
You know, because I think the lakes area too is a concern about setbacks from water and all, you know, so it's kind of, do you want to throw out that tool and just really streamline everything, or if you're gonna have a more complex tool, you might as well use it everywhere, I think. We're gonna keep RV parking sites and keep time limits and all of that kind of thing, you might as well do that everywhere and gain those benefits from, you know, that you get from having setbacks and all that kind of thing.
So, Councillor Fancy's been putting his hand up.
Okay, I think we should just simplify it. As again, is what we've just talked about, have it as a limit of two. But if you have, again, if you say you can't write it into your bylaws to have a special permit or anything, but we can have a permit here. If somebody has, like they have a something they want to do, they make their permit application a month before, whatever, and just say we're having a social thing and I'm going to have five here, then they make the permit application to the region. The region says yes, you can have the five on that day. But it's only for one, it's so you get a permit here. It's not in the land use bylaw, but we would have it here. If you want to have more than two, you're going to have to ask for it for that day. Because I know that was one of the things that came through the last time that people were saying, well, you know, during the summer I'll have a maybe July 1st, we have a bunch of people over and I'll have, and it could be a problem right then. Well, you got to weigh out. Have to make your application here. If you don't make your application, you can't get it. And then we can be able to limit to it so somebody doesn't just do it every weekend. They have to make their application.
And that in itself spells out what's the permit, what's the jurisdiction for the permit.
So would that be similar to Queens County Fair putting in?
No, they're campground
permit. They already know that they're allowed to do that?
They're zoned that and they apply to the province for permits. Campground permit. Name is Hank Snow, their campground. But then permitting, how do we judge? How would that look? Like where I live, if I put a permit and say I want to have 10 motorhomes, what's the judge? Is it space? Is it area? Is it cleared land? Is it how far from my neighbors? I mean, I know people that have 10 cleared acres. And then they have, other people have 10 acres and only a half cleared. How do you justify it? I guess we need to look at what was the purpose, go back to the root. What was the purpose of this RV issue in the first place? So the purpose was to prevent people from putting all kinds of RVs on a small lot. That was the purpose. So that's the purpose of this, is to prevent people from putting all kinds of RVs on a small lot. So why would you do permits to to allow that, because then we're gonna.
So if we just cap it at two, then it would cover anything.
Because then we're gonna get back into a situation where some people might come in and apply for a permit to put a lot of RVs on a small lot. And we'll be back to square one again. So, do you just wanna do a cap?
If we keep it at two, does that cover the intent? I guess, do you foresee any new problems that you're concerned about, like Mike as well, from a staffing point that we should be prepared for, or?
Except in urban serviced areas, or in urban serviced areas, you can have one or 30 days.
That's tricky, because there's some urban zones in Brooklyn.
That are rural.
That won't work.
That are rural.
That won't work.
Probably shouldn't, yeah, no.
Two. Stick to two.
For a maximum number of days? So then you live in downtown, or like in Hunts Point, my neighbor's this far away, and I got this much land, and I'm gonna put two big old RVs in there. Right up against my neighbor's sidelines, all summer long.
I think we have to have setbacks.
You gotta have setbacks, you can't just, I mean, we all don't live in big open spaces, you have to think about the people. Think about the woman that didn't even want the second accessory dwelling allowed on the property.
But then we go back to, Maddie, you got family coming.
Right.
And they're gonna park in her driveway.
Right.
They won't be allowed. Because we don't have the setbacks, so that's not gonna work.
No, so I guess you're getting back to your, I guess your temporary and limiting.
I don't have any family come with a trailer, just clarify, but I live in Dallas.
Yeah, I think it just kinda gets into the hard points, the complexity it is in the current document, you know, on the one hand, you can have a pretty, well, yeah, fundamentally, our goal is deal with the people who
abuse.
Buy a small lot and put eight RVs on it and have a party every weekend and
right.
Make neighbors really angry. You know, and you can deal with that pretty straightforward by just capping the number of RVs on a lot. Great. It's easy to enforce. You know, there's no permits needed. It's all very simple. It's very clear. You miss out on the nuance of, you don't get to control setbacks. There's no time period to it, and you miss out on the special events where someone's having a wedding and wants to have 10. You know, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it happens. You know, the alternative is to go this more detailed, where we actually create a land use that the land use bylaw can regulate, which is the RV parking site. That allows us to do the power of setbacks, to look at things like making sure we have some sort of black water system. And it also allows the granting of permits, I guess, for power and stuff like that. That's the other piece. But then that misses out on the people who just want to come for the weekend down to Ontario. And so you make an exception to that. And that's complex. So.
We also have to remember there's many people in our community that weren't even aware of the existing land use bylaws, and people who are traveling in from other provinces aren't willing to be aware either.
However, I don't think we want to just say blanket two RVs on any lot anywhere in Queens County. Because we're gonna see them on those those undersized lots before 2009. We heard lots of complaints going out toward White Point, Somerville, about trailers sitting on those lots. So now we're gonna allow two. I mean, and sometimes I think you just do what you have to do and just hope for the best. But I certainly don't want blanket two RVs on any lot in Queens County. Because then we're just.
Would a minimum lot size help?
As soon as, probably not. I think as soon as we start putting parameters around it, then we're treating it like a land use rather than a vehicle. If we're starting to say, oh, you better care about the lot size, you know, then you're kind of thinking, oh, you really shouldn't have a permit to be proving that. And you could, it wouldn't be very.
Yeah, if there's no permits required, it's pretty tough to regulate, because that's where you get into your lot size and your setbacks and things like that. But if they're just parking, they're allowed to blanket statement. There's really can't really apply, you know, lot size to that for something you're not permitting. Should permits for. So I guess what's written here is an attempt to control or those situations that have presented themselves with multiple RVs. I think the provision, if they're being treated as a seasonal residence or as a cabin, they should be subject to certain setback requirements, the same as every other seasonal dwelling would be as well. Just the question boils down to those temporary short-term visitors to the site. I think it comes back to time frame, I think. I hate to throw it maybe with the bath water, and just to allow for that blanket too, although certainly easier to from a staff perspective to regulate. I think there's too much benefits in my mind in the criteria that have been established in the documents just to throw it. I would sooner see an increase in the days and potentially that they're allowed to park on the lot and a cap on the number of RVs that you want to be on the property. It's not as easy to regulate, obviously, but I think it's in my mind a better solution.
Councilor Brown?
So if we wrote it in such a way that you're allowed a cap of two per lot before it's considered a campground, and anything over 14 days, 21 days, 30 days, or whatever, pick a date, then requires following setbacks. That allows for people to bring one in for a visit, but if they're going to stay for a longer period of time, then they have to abide by the setbacks because they're becoming semi-permanent.
So it doesn't prohibit them from staying longer, it just puts some provisions
right.
Around it.
Yeah. I think anything over 21 days, most people only get 2 weeks vacation at a time. If you're over 21, over 3 weeks, then you're really spending the summer and you're seasonal. It's getting close to that point.
So leave it as is, put a cap on the number, and if it goes and have it such that if you're going to have, say, more than two, then you require setbacks.
It wasn't more than two that required setbacks. It was if you're going to stay
more
than
time.
X amount
if you're there
oh,
for more than,
more
the, than 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, then you require the setbacks because you're becoming semi-permanent then. And most trailers, if anybody's ever used a trailer any length of time, if you've got a self-contained gray water, black water system, about 5 days is the limit of those tanks, and you have to move them or dump them somehow. So putting too long a period of time on it can be an issue with people not having them pumped or dumped.
Can I summarize? If I'm
sure.
keeping what we have now, putting a cap on the number of temporary ones so that you don't have six people come down every weekend and playing with the length of the day.
Yeah.
So that was two RVs per lot. Doesn't matter if there's a house dwelling already there. But if no dwelling, it's still two, right? Are we still doing that?
I think two temporary ones.
Temporary.
Yeah.
And then once you start getting to RV parking spaces, you basically keep what you have, where it's one and one.
But we're still going to take off that 14 days. So
Wendy, do you want to come up and sit with these guys?
As the one that actually...
Wendy, come up and...
Yeah.
It's only fair to have the person that has to deal with the permits and the...
The one
that really understands this.
I think
use it, and that's the reason why we're putting it in play. I do like the capping it and not having six on a property or something like that. But I don't know, I think there's gonna be problems with not requiring setbacks, especially on smaller properties, because this technically would be allowed right in the middle of Liverpool. Small properties that you're right on someone else's property line. Those are the issues that I see. There's also the issues of people right now that are they have a dwelling. There are people that are we've had issues with in the past, and this is going to allow them to then put those RVs back on there. Actually, have them there for 30 days or whatever they decide to do.
Councilor Romero.
What about, if we don't include the setbacks, what about in Somerville along there, where they put the RVs along the ocean? If there's no setbacks, will they still be allowed?
They're there.
I know, but in future ones, if they...
Well, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Those are an example of what would be allowed if we didn't have setbacks, because they're undersized lots, which existed prior to 2009. So we still allow things to happen on them. And without setbacks, those, yes, that would be legally able to continue.
Yeah. Because they are a vehicle, and I think our only avenue really is the RV parking sites as a use, not the RVs themselves. Because they're a vehicle, we can't regulate a vehicle under the land use bylaw, so put that provision out, the RV parking stalls, and requiring a development permit for that. So they can park it basically anywhere.
Charlton?
I just want to, I know I would have many folks in my area concerned about potentially their neighbor being able to put two RVs on their property. So I'm just trying to think, would that look differently in a higher density zone? Though I know I sort of mentioned this before, but as far as like my zone, I think I'm an R1. Typically a lot of them are smaller lots. And as far as kind of wondering about the lot size as well, because then I know some other areas that are in R1 or R2, but they have really big parcels of land that aren't your typical lot in town next to, you know, the tennis court or whatever.
I guess the current documents are silent on RVs altogether. And not able to regulate the RVs themselves. Technically, they could be doing that now.
Right.
I don't think that's really ever been an issue.
Well, it looks like we do have a court case based on.
Yeah, but again, I think you're
within level.
It certainly hasn't been an issue.
So, I think it's kind of like, I think of an approach that is probably functional, and I'll give you a chime in, but if you are more than two RVs, you're a campground. So, you define campground, that's easy. If you're fewer than two, or if you're two or one RVs, and you're less than 14 days, or whatever days, 14 days, you're temporary, like we currently have it. More than 14, you're an RV parking site like we have it. So we're adding that piece of one to the campground that deals with all the ones. We're keeping this approach, which allows us to have a setback, allows us to specify where the semi-permanent RVs are located. We still have that provision for temporary people coming to visit.
Agreeing on how many days.
That work? 14, you said 14 days?
Currently 14.
Right. 14 cap on two. If you want any more, you have to apply for the campground permit. It has to be a campground thing. If you're gonna be there for a long time, then do the RV camping application.
I still feel like 14 is restrictive, but that's just my opinion.
So are we all right with that? I hear one person wants the 14 days more. Are we happy with the 14, or do you want it more?
I think it should be 30.
I agree. I think 14 is too low, but then you're the expertise here, so this is where it gets really confusing.
Yes.
You know, because it's
and I think the days as we've indicated earlier, that's really gonna come to light issues. Going around, looking and marking down for RVs on the property. It's a mechanism, so a neighbor complains that there's an issue that triggers us investigating and starting the block. So how likely it's gonna be trailers living there for longer than the 14 days. There's no idea number. But looking at it from both sides, when there's issues, 14 days is too much time. But if there's not an issue.
Well, I guess just to put it this way, if you allow 30 days and someone comes in and complains, then we go out and we do our investigation, the clock starts. They have another 30 days.
Right, exactly. Yes.
There goes the whole summer or.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
I understand that. Based on, I feel like I'm flipping today, but based on that, 14 days would be reasonable. And if they know up front, if my whatever is coming down to visit and bring their RV, save a couple weeks. If not, you know, you gotta go find some place to park. You know, that's, or maybe even park my neighbors. No, for example, you know, I mean, not to be silly, but yeah, but you know, like then that would work. Yeah, okay. I think that we should go back to status quo, 14 days. Two, any more than two, it's a campground. Campground, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Agreement on that?
Yeah,
Councilor Brown?
I agree with that, because I think if somebody's there, if we put 2 weeks in and somebody calls by law enforcement and Kellyanne has to go out and say, you know, look, the person says, I'm only going to be here for another week, then that determination can be made. But if the person is planning on staying there the whole time, then that determination is also made, and they're explained that they can't have it. I mean, it's like I say, by the time somebody calls, they've probably been there a week, so they're going to get 3 weeks.
That's a challenge.
Yeah.
And so in this case, that person could still remain there, but they would need to do it under the RV parking site and then make sure they're meeting the setbacks. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Carl,
so someone wanted to abuse this, maybe just sit 2 weeks, drive off the lot, drive back, 4 weeks.
It's total.
Because it says total, yeah, I guess, but.
Yeah, and I guess that's going to come into our investigation. It's, you start your time frame, you're going to have to investigate the property multiple times to see. But I guess we can track that information. That okay, you were there for however many days first, then get back. That's just going to add up. So it's going to be work on staff's part to regulate. But
only going to be so many of those ones.
Yeah. There's not going to be a perfect solution to this, unfortunately. And
I think we just got to limit it to the two, and maybe. Possible, maybe just one in an urban area or something.
I guess to get back to the challenge, because you're not issuing permits for those temporary uses. That unless you're requiring permits, it's hard to regulate or dictate the number of them.
Okay.
All right. So we're set on that?
Yeah.
You know where that's going? I'm looking and thinking, okay, we spent probably 45 minutes on that. Our last one is gonna be livestock operations, which I know is gonna be about an hour. Do you want to just finish up the next two?
Oh, okay.
Before we, and then take a lunch break, and then come back and take up at, the livestock operation one? Or do you wanna just break now and come back and finish the last three items on this?
I just wanted to make one comment, sorry, during, before you answered that, to the planning folks. Would it be possible, under that point where it says about RVs parked on a property not located past the 14 days, could we then clarify in that statement that the RV, that that's, you can stay past the 14 days if you're subject to the RV site plan? So that, because when people read that, they just think 14 days, that's it. So can we clarify that?
Yeah, I think that's currently in, is as the introductory thing. Not continue 14 days in a calendar year, RVs.
Yeah, just in the language though, just to make it more, and also the part about parking them for storage.
Personal use.
Yes, please.
Yeah, clarify that, yeah, which.
Sorry, Darlene, I just didn't want to forget that.
So anyone, it's very clear to them that you've got options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if your RV's parked there, it's not considered use. If you don't have a storage spot for it. So do you wanna just take a, do you wanna break now and then come back?
Sounds good.
It's 12. And then we'll finish this section, or because the livestock one is, and subsequent under, we're not getting through this item in any time soon. So we'll break and reconvene at 1. So you've got 56 minutes.